And music means that it's the food show. And this is the wife, Marianne Fitzmaurice, sitting in for Tom today, all by myself, solo. So that means give me a call, because I'm going to need someone to talk to. 260-6368 is the number. I think that today is a wonderful day. It is National Crab Meat au Gratin Day. And I had a great crab meat au gratin for lunch. And there are lots of crab meat au gratins around town. And if you have one that you know of that you really like, I would definitely be interested in hearing it. We went to Bosco's on the North Shore for lunch today. And I got a muffalata as a, well, we had to take a picture of it for the website, nomenu.com. because we're going to be talking about muffalatas there. And crab meat au gratin just happened to be the special. And so I got it. I was kind of hoping that they would have crab claws there because they have really, really great crab claws. But I had to settle for the crab meat au gratin. They did have excellent bread from Angelo's for the muffalata, which is kind of essential to the muffalata. The bread is a really key ingredient. And the fun part about the lunch was that Tom, who is always joking with the rest, with the server about garlic and sardines. Everything is garlic and sardines to Tom. So usually the response from servers is that they're puzzled. They look at me for an explanation. Sometimes they understand right away that it is a joke, but for the most part, they really kind of think he's serious. And so if he's talking about garlic or and sardine ice cream or whatever it is, they want to give him what he wants. So today we actually had an unusual experience. The server did come back with two sardines, and actually they weren't sardines, they were anchovies. And like a pile of garlic salt. It was the first time that any server has gone through that much trouble to respond to one of Tom's silly jokes, with the exception of one night at Pat Gallagher's when he asked for a pet bunny, which was also a favorite shtick of his. And the waitress came back with one of those cloth animals that she had crafted herself back there, like the ones that you get on cruise ships. And so that was, those are the two times that I've ever seen someone get so invested in one of Tom's jokes for a server. Anyway, 260-6368 is the number. Tom will be back tomorrow. And on Friday, we have two special guests. We have Danny Millen from formerly Cava, which he has closed and sold in order to open Azul, which is a sports bar right in Lakeview as well. And Tommy from Tommy's Restaurant and from Tomas Bistro and the empire that he created, a lot of it real estate, which he finally sold and is now retired on a horse farm across the river. And if he's not riding horses, he's flying his plane. So nice. Good job for him. And he is actually an immigrant from Mexico. Those guys all came over together, Tommy and Danny and Octavio, who runs the Besh Restaurant Group now. So good example of the American dream in action. 260-6368. So I have so many Porter and Lukes, Doug, that I'm just going to go ahead and do a Porter and Luke right now. Porter and Luke, we have talked about so many times on this show, and I'm sure that you have determined that I am a huge fan of Porter and Luke, as I am. We go there, my daughter and I, fairly often because she has a house not far from there. And since we're working on that house, it's a quick place to run over for lunch. But that's not the reason that we go to Porter and Luke, because there are plenty of other places we could run for lunch in the Metairie area. We go to Porter and Luke because we love Porter and Luke. We love the comfort food that they serve at Porter and Luke. She likes the wedge salad, which you can get with crab meat, which she doesn't eat, or shrimp remoulade or fried oysters. She gets a salad with fried chicken. If you don't want fried chicken on a salad and you want a big old pile of fried chicken, they do that. And it's quite good. As a matter of fact, they're sort of famous for it. And I love the club sandwich at Porter & Luke. To me, it's the best in town. They tend to serve it with a honey mustard dressing, and I ask them to sub out the mayo for it, which is exactly the right way to do it for me, and it's delicious. They have fresh-cut chips, and it's a big pile of sandwich and crunchy goodness, and that's what I get. Porter & Luke has all kinds of things, and since I have four times to tell you about it, we'll just go through their menu piece by piece in each commercial. But Porter & Luke is over there on Metairie Road, 1517 Metairie Road, in the shopping center where Walgreens is, right next to Kenseco, which is next to Oakland Heart. So go pay them a visit. Porter & Luke, they are now open on Sunday, serving brunch. But that is not all they do there. On Sunday, you can get the regular menu as well. That's Porter & Luke. I love Tom's Almanac. It's kind of addictive, and I was reading it a little bit before I came on the air. And today is the day that George Bush, the first, 41, was quoted with his rant about broccoli. And if I'm sure you've heard it. I mean, you might not if you're younger. You might not have heard it because that was a long time ago when he was president. But today he said, "I do not like broccoli, and I haven't liked it since I was a little kid, and my mother made me eat it. And I'm president of the United States, and I'm not going to eat any more broccoli." Now, look, this is the last statement I'm going to have on broccoli. "There are truckloads of broccoli at this very minute descending on Washington. My family is divided for the broccoli vote out there. Barbara loves broccoli. She has tried to make me eat it. She eats it all the time herself so she can go out and meet the caravan of broccoli that's coming in." George Bush was born today in 1925, recently deceased, but probably died not liking broccoli. And I'm guessing, having been president of the United States, didn't eat a whole lot of it after that. My son's mother-in-law does something with broccoli that I think is different, and I wouldn't expect to like it, but I actually think it's a pretty great thing to do. Broccoli, to me, is, there's also another thing in Tom's Almanac about canned vegetables and how mushy they are. Broccoli, when it becomes overcooked, kind of just wilts and is sort of nothing. But if you get broccoli, and if it's not cooked well enough, then it's crunchy and also not good. But there's a certain point where you cook broccoli, and if you hit it, I always call it the sweet spot. If you hit it at the sweet spot, broccoli's pretty great. But my son's mother-in-law does something with broccoli that kicks it up a notch. She cooks it to the sweet spot, and she always does hit the sweet spot. But then she takes lemon and she squeezes lemon over it, and I don't think it really has a lot of flavor with regard to broccoli, but for some reason it perks it up in a way that makes it even better than it normally is. And I've come to doing it that way myself when I cook broccoli, which is really rare. 260-6368 is the number. If you've been eating anywhere good lately, I'd like to hear about it. I feel like I'm eating just about all the time now, so I have lots and lots of stuff to talk about places that we have eaten. Also at Bosco's today, Tom got a salad with his chicken parm, and the dinner salad, or the salad that you get free with your entree there, is one of the best in town. I don't know why, even. It's very crisp lettuce, and it's soft tomatoes, but the dressing is this really fresh, really light, olive oily, wonderful, herby kind of dressing. And it's got all of the elements that make a great salad dressing, particularly a light salad dressing, in exactly the right proportion. and it's really good, and it's really light enough where it doesn't really affect your appetite. It's just say it's sort of like an amuse-bouche. It sort of perks up your palate. Do we have we have a caller, so let's get Ron, the gourmet waiter, I guess, on the phone. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Marianne. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You?
Doing very well. I thought since the cat was away, the mice will play, and we can segue right into sandwiches, if that's okay with you.
I'd love to segue into sandwiches, because I love sandwiches.
I do, too. I've always said they're underrated as a meal.
I know. You said that.
I've got a couple of things that I was thinking about from yesterday's call, and it's about sandwiches. These are things that I do at home when I want to just eat something a little different. What I'll do is I'll take some pizza dough, which I make from scratch, and I'll roll it out, and I make sandwich ideas into pizzas.
Okay.
An example of that would be I'll make a muffaletta pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get two or three types of deli meats, two or three different types of cheeses, and olive salad, and spread all that out and put that right into the oven, and I've got a muffaletta pizza.
Yeah, works for me. What else do you do?
Eggplant parmesan is another one that I do. Sometimes I'll do an eggplant parmesan, but I'll do this open face on French bread. That way I don't have to mess with the pizza dough.
Mm-hmm.
I just spread the French bread out, cut it, and then put, I just use tomato paste with some seasonings, probably thyme, parsley, oregano, maybe marjoram, and I'll put that right into the tomato paste, and I'll rub that tomato paste right on the bread. And then I'll fry up a little eggplant, and then come back in with a little Swiss cheese and then some Parmesan cheese, and now you've got an eggplant Parmesan open-faced po' boy.
How much do you cook? It sounds like you cook a lot. Do you eat much out, or do you mostly eat at home?
I eat almost every meal at home these days because I can cook very well, and I just I love cooking.
Yeah, well, clearly you do. You can tell when you start talking about it how much you love cooking. And I mean, you were the gourmet waiter. I don't know if you're still doing that, but if you're in a restaurant all the time, and I can't imagine that you would want to also eat out all the time. So I think that it would be a nice diversion to be cooking at home. Do you cook just for yourself?
I cook for myself. I've done some mild catering, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
I've competed in competitions. I won one.
Mm-hmm. For barbecue or what?
This was a jambalaya competition that was a fundraiser for a hospice in Elmwood.
Tell me your jambalaya recipe quickly.
Well, what I did is I made a seafood jambalaya. Knowing that jambalaya comes from paella, what I did is I made them a paella, but I put paprika into it to make it look orange, more like jambalaya.
Mm-hmm. So basically you made a paella.
Yes.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of paella, but I am of jambalaya. I don't think they're the same. I definitely think there's more of a meatier taste to our jambalaya and more of a seafood taste to a Spanish paella.
Yeah, I agree, because I end up putting three different things in my jambalaya. I typically put some kind of sausage, I put chicken, and then I'll put shrimp.
See, I don't like jambalaya. I'll eat it if it's there, but I don't really care to mix the meat and the seafood together. For some reason, I don't like those two things together. To me, they're two different universes, and they don't belong together. But that's just me. I mean, there are lots of jambalayas that have both of those things. But making it myself, I would not put the seafood in it.
If I put the shrimp in, I'm going to either go with a beef stock or I'm going to go with a chicken stock. So all you're getting basically is the shrimp flavor is just from the shrimp. They don't take over the dish.
Yeah. You know what? I don't put my own spices in jambalaya. I use the box. I cheat. I admit it right out in front of God and everyone.
And you bake it in an oven.
I remember
the show. You bake it in the oven.
But, you know, I also have come to get like a pulled pork that has a lot of fat in it. And when I'm doing when I'm doing the vegetables, I will also either do that with sausage or throw some pulled pork, like smoked pulled pork in there, and just get that pork fat flavor and just throw that in there too. But I mean, you can kind of not go wrong with jambalaya. I mean, it's rice, it's meats, you know. How far wrong can you go?
I think you said that sometimes you use a rotisserie chicken.
I do, but I try not to. I would rather use like a smoked chicken, like from barbecue, or do it myself. But in a pinch, I will do a rotisserie chicken. Yeah, but not the barbecue flavor, because I think that's like smoked chemicals or something, the barbecue flavor.
Yeah, the thing I've noticed in cooking is I don't like smoked meats with tomato for some reason.
I've never thought of that.
I've tried it. I put smoked meats in a jambalaya.
I don't like tomato in jambalaya. To me, I like the brown jambalaya. I do the brown jambalaya.
Yeah,
no, as a matter of fact, I don't like tomato at all. If it's red, I'm not going to eat it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't mean to be so draconian, but I'm not a fan of it.
What would you normally put in your jambalaya? Maybe like an andouille sausage?
I do the chicken. I do some pork with fat, and that's it. And then I do the spices from the box and vegetables. I do the Holy Trinity.
Onions, garlic.
It's pretty simple.
I
don't do garlic. I just do the celery, onions, and bell pepper. And I usually render that off with the sausage so you can get the sausage flavor in there. And then I'll get some water and deglaze the pan and use that water along with the chicken stock to flavor the jambalaya.
Have you ever used a blanc roux in your jambalaya?
No. I don't ever really do roux. And in fact, I used to only do roux when I made chicken gumbo. But I'll tell you what. There's a guy that started inviting us to a party maybe 2 or 3 years ago, a Christmas party, and it was celebrating his gumbo. Apparently, he's kind of famous in his circle, like he lives in an uptown neighborhood and the whole bunch of them, and also through Jesuit High School. And I tried that gumbo, and it's killer, and he doesn't use a roux at all, and it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, you can thicken up with other things. I made a gumbo one time, and I used sweet potatoes as the starch to thicken it up.
Mm. Was it sweet?
No, it was actually delicious. And it was orange in color, but it had seafood in it. It was a seafood gumbo. Yeah. It was a Paul Prudhomme recipe from a long time ago.
I see.
But
okay.
about gumbo, one of the things that I do, I don't like a whole lot of fat in my gumbo. I don't like that greasy layer on top.
Oh, I do.
So I bake my roux. It's nothing but flour.
Uh-huh. Well,
I'll put a 2-pound bag in the oven, and then once it's brown, I put it in little freezer bags in the freezer, and now I've got roux for 6 months.
That's cool. I like that idea. Okay, Ron, Doug is starting to have that look of antsiness as we have to get to a commercial, but thank you very much for calling. Talk to you later. Bye.
You're welcome.
260-6368. We'll be back. We are back. I'm Mary Ann Fitzmaurice sitting in for Tom today. He will be back tomorrow, and we will both do the show tomorrow and Friday. We will have two old friends and old friends of ours, Danny Millen from the Coming Up Azul, and Tommy from Tommy Andrade, who has a long history here, starting at the, he started before the Sazerac, but he was probably most well known for his long stint as the maitre d', to end all maitre d's, at the Sazerac in the Roosevelt Hotel. 260-6368. They'll be here on Friday talking to Tom and me. Today is also the day that Good and Plenty, the candy, was first rolled out. And Tom has a saying, and I don't know if this is Tom's saying or if this was probably some comedian said this. Licorice is the liver of candies, and it absolutely is. So licorice is a very strong flavor. You either really, really like it or you really, really don't like it. And its cousin flavors are anise and tarragon. And I like tarragon, and I really like anise in an Italian sausage. but I really don't like licorice, the candy, at all. Are you a licorice lover? Because I would like to know, in the general population, what the percentage of people who like licorice actually is. It's been around, this Good and Plenty candy came out in 1928. So, gosh, that's almost 100 years, like 91 years ago. So it's been a long time for them to still be around. So somebody must be eating Good and Plenty. And I see people eat licorice, or I see kids eat licorice. Licorice is such a strong flavor. I'm surprised that kids would like it. But I guess if you're going to eat licorice, you probably start eating it as a kid. And I don't know if you like licorice, what other unusual flavors you're attracted to. But I've always said, you know, people will say, well, you know, you have to just develop a taste for something. And I always say, I already like too much stuff. I need to get rid of some of the things that I like. I don't need to develop any taste for anything, really. I don't really want to acquire a taste for any more food because I've already got too much on my list that I eat too much of. 260-6368 is the number. That's 260-MENU. Do you like licorice? And if you don't like licorice and you do like some of those other flavors that are kind of associated with licorice, I don't know if they're made from licorice or if they're like, I don't know, is anise? I have to look this up. See, Tom would be able to answer this if he was right here. Anise is the primary flavor and licorice is made from anise. Okay. All right, Doug is shaking his head. Yes. Okay, so anise is the flavor, and licorice comes from that. Okay, so Doug's going to help me out here. Is that right, Doug?
Yes.
Okay, so...
There you go.
Now, anise is a seed.
Anise, yes, it is.
Okay, uh-huh. So it's a seed, and so the flavor for licorice is extracted from the seed and made into that stretchy black stuff.
That's right. Uh-huh. That Smith Brothers cough drops.
Okay. Wait a sec. Oh no, I like the wild cherry.
Yeah, those were very good too.
Now those are good. I mean, but licorice.
I would buy a box of those and put the whole thing in my mouth.
I would buy a box of those and eat them one by one. But you're not supposed to if it's cough medicine. Although I know, but it was good. It was definitely good. Do you eat the stringy licorice?
Oh sure,
you do.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you like that?
Yes,
like
I do.
That. Okay.
And you can have all my broccoli.
Okay, that's fine. That's fair enough. It's such a good trade. You can have all my licorice and I'll have all your broccoli.
Deal.
All right. 260-6368. I'm very curious if you are a licorice fan, if you eat a lot of licorice. I mean, Doug, do you eat a lot of licorice? Is that something that you actively seek out?
No, I probably drink more liquor than I do eat licorice, to tell you the truth. And not very much of that either.
Yeah, okay. Well, licorice is something that you, I can't imagine that you don't acquire a taste for it. I find it hard to imagine that some kid would pick up one of those stringy pieces of black candy and automatically like it. I don't know. Let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Marianne. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks.
I was just wondering if you had a chance to try a Mexican Coca-Cola yet.
No, I didn't. I haven't. You know, I saw it a day or two after you called about it, and I was tempted to buy one and then do the tasting on the air, but I did not. And then I forgot about it, to be honest with you.
Okay,
but I do want to do that. I do.
I hope you get a chance to, and I'll check in with you later and see what you think.
Are you a licorice person before you go?
You know...
It's if you got to think about it that hard, probably not.
It's okay. I prefer a good German red shoestring licorice. But
Wait, is red licorice different than black licorice? Yeah, I thought licorice was licorice. What?
No, it's strawberry flavored.
Oh, that's fake.
But to a licorice aficionado, red is not licorice.
No, it's not licorice. Actually, Doug, licorice root... there's a root. So I'm going to have to look this up because Yeah, because I think it comes from a root. And I wonder if anise seeds are part of the plant that is the root, and the seeds are all related in the same plant. Are you looking it up, Doug?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I'll tell you one thing. The Jelly Belly black licorice is actually really good.
Okay.
The jelly belly jelly bean.
Well, it's probably a lot of sugar in it. You know.
Oh yeah, that one I like, but most of them are.
It's probably got sugar in it. That's why you like it. Anyway, all right,
sure.
Check with me on the Mexican vanilla because. But you see, if you, not the Mexican, the Coke. If you like Mexican Coke because it's not so sweet, then it's a wonder that you like the jelly beans because those are super.
No,
sweet.
No, I like it because it has cane sugar and not a high fructose corn sweetener.
I see. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So it's not a sweetness thing. It's just a health thing. All right.
It's the flavor of the sweetener, in my opinion. So.
And you can tell the difference. Okay. All right.
Oh, really?
Well, now you got me curious again. I'm going to have to try and remember to do that. Stop in somewhere and
do it. I'll hold you to it.
Okay. Right, thanks, Paul. Bye. 260-6368. Doug has something to proffer.
The licorice is a plant by itself, or licorice. It's extracted from the root, and you're absolutely correct there. Now, there are other plants that are related to it.
Okay.
One of which is anise.
Okay.
The other one is star anise. And the other one is fennel.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. And mm-hmm. Is tarragon in that family somewhere?
Tarragon is not anywhere near there.
Well, I think that tarragon must be made from something like. I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up, too, but tarragon is that same flavor. It's in that same flavor profile. So it comes from one of those things somewhere, for sure.
I see no mention of it.
But licorice root, I knew, was something that I had heard of before. So this is what we need Tom for. He knows all these things just right off the top of his head. 260-6368 is the number. That's 260-MENU. We are talking kind of, about licorice. And broccoli, and I will keep going on various things on Tom's almanac until something does catch on. In the meantime, I will also talk about food that we have had recently. Last night we went to Del Porto, which I've decided is my favorite restaurant in town, period. People have asked me for a long time, what's your favorite restaurant? And I'm always just like overwhelmed by that question. And I go, blah, 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 blah. And I would say that this is the first time I can actually answer that question definitively. Del Porto is my favorite restaurant in town, period. I could answer that question for the entire world for a long time. That's Bottega Louie in Los Angeles. But I've never been able to answer it here. I mean, I like a lot of restaurants here. But I decided yesterday at Del Porto that's it. That's the number one for me here. The answer to, do you want to go to Del Porto, is always going to be yes. If the answer is, do you want to go to Del Porto or fill in the blank, the answer is going to be Del Porto. That's it. It's my favorite restaurant. So we happened to go, probably got there about 5 minutes before 6 when the happy hour ends. I'm a huge fan of happy hour. It's a great idea. I don't know who had it, but it's a great idea. Thank you to whoever that was. And they were having a pretty extensive menu. They had like 2 wines. I didn't look at cocktails, but the menu for the happy hour was pretty varied. They had about, I don't know, 8 things on it, all of which were incredibly good, and I wanted to try them all, but they're just, you know, you just can't. But we got a pizzetta and a little tiny dish of ricotta nudi and some Fritto misto, I think that's how you say it. And essentially what that is a basket of fried. That's pretty much what it is. You see it in Italy with a piece of paper wrapped in a cone and a pile of whatever they're feeling like frying that day. Could be mushrooms, could be artichokes, could be shrimp or fish. And that's it. It's just fried vegetables and usually fish and shrimp. And so they were serving that, and all of these appetizers were from the regular menu at half the price. And now, in the case of the nudie, it was really small, but the Frito Misto was a pretty good size, and the pizzetta was really pretty big. It was superb. The pizzetta was superb. It was a really thin crust, and it had little bits of steak on it, and it could be a better pizza than just about any place I can think of. If you put that pizzetta in front of me and any other pizza that I can think of in recent memory, I would go for it. It was really, really that good. But again, not surprising, because I've never had anything there that I didn't not just like, but love. So, and it's not only the food. I mean, it's the whole package. The place is gorgeous, and it's just a really great, great place to go. I love it. Anyway, I'll tell you some more about that dinner in a minute, but we have a caller, and I stop cold for caller. 260-6368, Steve.
It's me.
It's Steve. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. I'd rather slam my hand on a car door than eat licorice.
Yeah, oh yeah. I agree. But I never really think of it in those terms. I just don't even think about eating it. It's just like off the radar. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to think about that.
But I do like anise. And
I do too.
I do like fennel.
Yeah. I mean, they're like cousins, you know?
Yeah. But they're so much milder. I mean, it's not even close.
Well, they're kind of pleasant, whereas licorice, I don't really think is.
We used to give my stepfather loved anise, I mean, licorice.
Uh-huh.
So we'd give him, you know, good sized box of licorice every year.
Which is probably cheap because it's just like a pile of yuck.
Yeah.
But, it's a pile of yuck.
But he loved it. Nobody would touch his supply of licorice. So.
Yeah, it's not quite the same as having a stash of chocolate almonds dusted in coconut. Your supply of licorice is probably going to be safe from other people.
Yeah, anybody want some licorice?
Yeah.
No, get it out of here.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I even know if it has a smell. I've not encountered it often enough to even realize if there's a smell, but I just don't like it at all.
I'd stay away from it.
Crab
meat au gratin. I love Sal and Judy's.
Mm-hmm.
Crab meat au gratin.
Absolutely.
Their crawfish au gratin is better.
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever had that?
No. You know, I have my... I've got a lot of things.
Yeah, I know.
I have a lot of silly rules. Things that really shouldn't be a thing, but they are for some bizarre reason. And so for a while there, I just decided, I don't know, crawfish seemed gross to me, so I stopped eating them. And now I'm back to eating them. But if I'm given the choice between...
timing.
Why? Because it's... No, but I mean, this was like...
The season's almost over.
No, but this is like years ago. I had a couple of years running that I didn't do crawfish. But I've gone back to eating crawfish this year. But I just don't... I don't like them as much as shrimp or crab. I mean, crab's kind of like the king to me.
To me, it's shrimp, crawfish, and oysters.
Really?
And seafoods.
And you're not really... You're not into crab.
Nah,
that's good because crab's the most expensive by far.
Yeah, and I think it's the least demonstrative taste. I mean,
maybe that's why I like it. It's like, you know, I don't really like really, really strong flavors. So
that's like people that, you know, well, I like fish. Yeah, what kind of fish do you like? Well, you know, like the one that they use at McDonald's.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. That is actually really good. That's why it's overfished. Cod is really good.
Oh God, you got to be kidding! Have you cooked cod just? Bake it.
No.
It is nasty.
It doesn't have a flavor.
Well, the
are you talking about the salt cod that you reconstitute?
No. Okay. No, my wife bought some cod. We were eating fish on a diet and she bought cod at Rouse's, and you're supposed to cook it with fennel and all of this, and the texture was just nasty, and the flavor was nothing.
You sure it wasn't tilapia?
No, I know tilapia. Okay. I can't stand tilapia.
Yeah.
Similar, but the texture is even worse than the texture for tilapia.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
It is.
I can't imagine.
It is less.
Well, then I don't understand, because maybe it's haddock.
That's pollock and haddock that they use in McDonald's.
Okay. Okay. Well, then that must be it, because haddock is good. I love haddock.
The crab, the imitation crab meat.
Yeah.
That's pollock, which is, you know, a North Sea fish.
And yeah. Yeah.
You know,
anything, in my opinion, that starts out with the word imitation is probably something you want to stay away from.
Yeah, okay. Well, what if they said, would you like a pollock stick?
Well, I didn't even know that.
It's supposed to resemble crab meat, and, you know, and that's like they say, doing that with sheep's head. You know, you boil the sheep's head in cheesecloth, sheep's head, the fish. And they say, oh, it's, you know, just like crab meat. Well, okay, it's imitation crab meat.
Yeah, no, I'd rather the... to me, the most disgusting of those imitation things is when they use... you know what? I don't even want to think about it. When they would take the skate fish and cut the little round shapes and pretend they were
like
scallops.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, I can't do that. That's disgusting. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, thank you for calling.
Later.
260-6368 is the number. That's 260-MENU. We need another break, don't we, Doug? No? Yeah, let's go ahead and take it now. Yeah. We'll be back. 260-6368. That's the one piece of music bumper music that I like. What is that? Oh, start all over again. Yeah. Okay. 260-6368 is the number. That's 260-MENU. We were talking about licorice and broccoli, and we haven't really gotten anything going, so I'm going to throw out yet another thing to talk about, which is Worcestershire sauce. Today is the day that Lord Marcus Stanley, John Lee, and William Perrins created the sauce for Lord Marcus Stanley, who had just returned to England after many years in India, and he wanted to duplicate the sauce that he really liked there. And that was probably Southeast Asian fish sauce. And Worcestershire sauce is very similar to that. What is that? It's called New Mock, I think. Tom has some and he uses it every now and then. The pharmacist concocted the sauce from fermented anchovies, tamarinds, molasses, vinegar, garlic, chili peppers, cloves, and a few other things. The first attempt tasted horrible. They left it in a barrel in their basement and forgot about it for 2 years. When they found it again, they discovered that it aged into something rather good. The sauce was named for Lee and Perrins and for their hometown, Worcester. I didn't know that. Wait, Worcestershire sauce? Yeah, that's how I say it. Anyway, I like Worcestershire sauce, and I use it in a lot of things, but I also use... what is the sauce that it's a Caribbean steak sauce that's made here? Does anybody know the name of that? It's made over. I don't know if it's made over there, but it's sold. It's actually made. It's made in the Caribbean, but it's right next to Fury's restaurant, and it's a local company that distributes this sauce. But I can't remember the name of it. And I used to make it. It was kind of a. Pimento cheese, before pimento cheese became all the rage, it was cheese, like a cheddar cheese, and cream cheese. And I think the only other thing that was in this is whatever that sauce is that I can't think of, which is a Caribbean sauce, and they are distributing it or selling it out of the building that is right next to Fury's. If anybody goes to Fury's and knows the people that I'm talking about, give me a call because it's going to drive me crazy. But it's a local thing. And I use that in lieu of Worcestershire sauce. They really don't taste the same. And I don't really use that sauce as much anymore because I don't really have any of it. But I do use Worcestershire also now in pimento cheese, and that works really well. I also like to take Worcestershire sauce, and if I've got steak left over from a restaurant, I'll slice it really thin, and I'll put butter. Thank you. Pick a pepper, yeah. Boy, that is popular here. And I will, I'll take the pan and like just do a little coating of butter and then put Worcestershire sauce in there and then slice the steak and coat it with the Worcestershire. And I think that's really good for leftover steak. Anyway, pick a pepper. Before, this goes back to like a long time ago, like college days, when people had simpler tastes. And I know people are going to scream at the radio when I say this, but when people had simpler tastes and you didn't go through quite as much trouble to do is there a call there, Doug? No. Okay. And you didn't go through as much trouble to bring an appetizer to a party. Well, it was really, really popular, I would say maybe 30 or 40 years ago. And I know people are still doing it. And I'm not saying anything about it because a lot of people really, really do like this. But it's just like you open up a package of cream cheese and you douse it in pick-a-pepper sauce and you serve it with crackers. Is that the right recipe? I mean, I don't pay enough attention to this thing to notice if that's quite right. But I always think of when I see that, I always think, well, you know, maybe a little bit more ambition might have been a good thing if you're going to bring an appetizer somewhere. Anyway, 260-6368, pick a pepper sauce has its own unique flavor. I think it's a lot sweeter than Worcestershire. It's about the same color. It's a little thicker. It seems to have a little more tamarind, if I'm guessing correctly, because there's sort of like a sludge maybe to it, but I'm not really sure because I don't eat it too much. I've moved to Worcestershire for my pick a pepper sauce, not pick a pepper, for my pimento cheese. 260-6368 is the number. Porter and Luke is a wonderful neighborhood place in Metairie, and is tucked away in that little shopping center by Walgreens and Oakland Heart. They're sort of on opposite sides of that shopping center. And there are a couple restaurants in the shopping center, but to me, there's only one, and that is Porter and Luke. It is a neighborhood restaurant. Someone said, obviously, they've gotten a lot of attention from all the spots that we're doing here. And they're also on our website. But someone sent an email saying that, you know, I really like Porter and Luke, but they serve your drink in those plastic cups, and I feel like they shouldn't do that if they, you know, want to be a serious restaurant. And I don't like those plastic cups either. And whenever I see them, I think, ugh, you know. But I don't mind there because, first of all, I'm used to it. And second, it's a neighborhood restaurant. I mean, it basically is a neighborhood restaurant. It has a little more of an upscale vibe to it than your basic neighborhood restaurant. They have white fake tablecloths, you know, the paper ones. And I just don't think they're trying to be pretentious in any way. I don't necessarily think that's pretentious. I think that's a very classy thing to do, to have a white tablecloth. But I don't really feel like it's necessary. And so they sort of are a hybrid. They have, you know, the paper white tablecloths. But I'm much more concerned about the food there, which is just really, really good. It's excellent comfort food. There's a thing that I need to try at some point, which is kind of like this braised chicken. It's not a soup, but it's a really thick kind of sauce. It would be like chicken pot pie or chicken and dumplings with you know, sheets of pasta in it. That looks really good. It's on my list of things to try, but I can't get past the club sandwich, which I think is the best in town. There is also something they're very famous for. It's a signature dish, which is a fried eggplant half, like a bowl, stuffed with seafood stuffing. And that is served over angel hair pasta in a cream sauce, really low-cal, let me tell you. Anyway, there's a lot of great stuff, and you don't have to eat like that at Porter & Luke. There are salads, and they're great salads. They have a really great ham shank or sausage or pork chop with their red beans when they have that. And it looks, you know, it's a good menu, and it's kind of hard to decide because it is as good as it looks. That's Porter & Luke, 1517 Metairie Road in Metairie. Do go check it out. We are talking about, I was talking about Del Porto because I had, we'd just gone to Del Porto last night for dinner, and Tom had the gnudi, which is essentially like a gnocchi. I don't know why they call it gnudi, but anyway. And I had the pizzetta, which I would have eaten two more of because it was really, really that good. And we had the Fritto Misto. But then we wound up getting, I got what I really wanted to get there, which is their antipasta board, which I think, or I thought, was the best in the city. And I remember it being $25, and we had sort of a situation. I saw it on the menu, and it has salumi on it. It has cheese and salumi and fruit and grilled vegetables and these great little ciabatta, like strips is what they are, grilled ciabatta strips, and a lot of olives. And so I saw salumi, and I said, what's different about it? Because this one's $16. Is this like a smaller portion or something? I said, it's usually $25, because I think that's a substantial thing in a restaurant to have something that's $25, especially as an appetizer. I mean, something that you would eat with four other people. So he said, no, it's $16. And I thought, well, gosh, they must have changed it in some way. So we wait, and what comes to the table is the salumi board, but it's not what I thought it was. I was thinking the antipasti board, which is $25, and it was at the top of the menu, so I didn't see it. So what comes to the table is this board of meats that I am not likely to eat, things like duck and caprese and things like that, and a gigantic pile of pork rinds and fried bread, and none of this, and like mango marmalade and stuff like that. And so none of this stuff was really appealing to me. And I said, well, this isn't, you really changed this. And he said, no, this is a salumi board. And I said, well, gosh, it looks a whole lot different. I mean, it's like not even remotely like the thing I remember. And I said, so I guess that's why it's $16 instead of $25. And it was all of a sudden, it was like this lightning bolt hit the waiter. And he goes, oh, I think you mean the antipasti board, which is $25 right here at the top of the menu. So I felt bad because I wasn't going to eat anything of what I had ordered. And I had ordered the wrong thing. And he felt bad because he should have had it click in his mind. If she's saying this, it's $25, then here's this thing that's $25. So we got lucky because, and this was kind of surprising to me, because they put it down on the table. And then he picked it up to go bring it back to the kitchen, which he insisted on doing. And the table next to us said, whoa, that looked great on the way out. So you can just drop that off right here and we'll take care of it for you. So I don't know if the restaurant charge them for that. I mean, it was untouched, but it did land at our table. I don't know if they planned on paying for it. I don't know what was going to happen. But she said, you know, they'll eat it in the kitchen for sure, but why have the kitchen eat it when I'm very happy to eat it? So they left it there. And then he brought me the right one, the one that I thought I was ordering for $25. But that too was different. It was a little bit, it wasn't smaller, it was the same price, and it had a lot of the same things on it, but it also had a lot of different things on it. And I have to say that I love it, but I didn't love it as much as I normally love it. But that is one of the best antipasti boards around town. And really, honestly, one of the best everything in town can be found at Del Porto. In my opinion, that is just my opinion, and it is my favorite restaurant in town. You are listening to Mary Ann Fitzmaurice.